All right, I think we're about ready to begin. There are in the back, and you can wait to get them, printouts. There is a QR code. If you want to grab that, I'll have it at the end. Yeah, I will. I'm setting it up, Samuel. But where was I? Yeah, no, so the QR code will take it to a Dropbox. If you don't have Dropbox, you can still access it. It was the easiest way to be able to do it. Well, let me open in prayer, then I will introduce myself. Unless, Sam, you would like to do it for me. No, I don't trust you. But let's pray. Our gracious God and our loving Father, we indeed are thankful that you are the God that calls, that the harvest is yours. But Father, you call us to be used of you to give the reminder of the need that the laborers are few. And so, our gracious God, we ask you would guide us in this time, in this hour, to consider what it is we can do and be how we can be used of you for the expansion of your kingdom. For we pray this in your Son's name. Amen. All right. All right, just by way of introduction, I am Chris Vogel. I'm the M&A Church Planting and Vitality Coordinator. And with me is Bill Golden. Bill, stand up and wave to everyone. He's the MTW Candidate Director. And we also have, because part of this whole process is the committees and agencies that are looking for kingdom workers, also, and I don't have it on here because I wasn't sure if it was going to be Chad or if it was going to be Wensler, but Chad Brewer, just with RUF, we're going to be talking in a broad sense among all three, a bit more specifically on M&A and MTW, and so just want to start with this question. It's going to seem an obvious question. And want a little interaction here. It's late in the afternoon. I have my energy drink to make sure I don't fall asleep during the presentation. So, do we need to develop Christian workers? Good. What are you doing to raise up generationally workers? Not just looking for someone to hire, but having a 10 or a 15-year plan. So who has a 15-year plan they are enacting right now? Anybody want to volunteer?
I just came from a Fellows Initiative. We have been at our church for 12 years. It's great.
If I put that there, we'll spill. And you'll see some things in here about Fellows Initiative, because that is one of the methods that we want to see that's going to operate. Excellent. Anyone else?
Right. Yeah. I also went to a fellows program and that benefited greatly from it. Also, our church has sent out a number of young people in the Christian work and then moved into a university community.
Great. Excellent. So, we're fellows twice, so I think we've got something going here. Yes. All right. Yeah, the reality is there. Having, for churches to have a clear laid out plan, it happens in some places. It doesn't happen really, I would say, often enough, because part of the issue here is there is a need that we have to recognize. Now, for many years, as you know, I've been in the PCA 40 years, and it was always that sense, the PCA has more teaching elders than positions, which is great for churches and hard if you're looking for an opportunity. People would say, hey, M&A, do you have a church planter? Yeah, we got 20 of them. Who do you want? Here's all their resumes. That's not happening anymore. And one of the things to recognize is what you see here. Now, this is just teaching elder addition and losses over 8 years. And again, you can download this and look at it further. But if you notice, okay, yeah, 2020, we all know it was not all that great. But if you notice from 21, it's increasing. Great news. But what also is increasing is retirement, transfer to other denominations, being removed, not so such great things, and just passing away. And so you see there, after from 2020 on, we are in the negative. What that means is in the last 8 years, we are 156 teaching elders fewer than we were in 2017. That's 19.5 loss each year. Now, there's a little good news is our PCA churches are growing. We have more members now than we did before. So it's good news, but that means we got more members, but we have fewer teaching elders to lead them. Well, what other things? Now, this comes from ATS, the Association of Theological Schools. So these are accredited seminaries, as you can see there. They ask the question of students in ATS schools, what's your denominational affiliation? And again, PCA is the highest, you know, among the ARP, EPC, OPC, fine. But you notice there that blue line is trending down, and it's about a 20% decrease in students who identify with our Reformed denominations, and PCA in particular. MDivs coming out of our seminaries over a 10-year period, again, ATS schools accredited, you can see them listed there. Only one is growing, and that is RTS. The others are not, but overall, we have, again, about a 20% drop in those leaving with an MDiv. But don't worry, there's some good news. And some good news that is much more cultural as well. This is one I've referred to over the years. It's a Barna poll, and you can discuss the reliability of Barna stats. And so it's often a question I ask when I'm talking, and that is, when did you first sense the call to vocational ministry? And according to this poll, and anecdotally, I see about the same, over 50% of Protestant ministers first sensed a call. It doesn't mean they pursued it right away, but like what Matt was saying, he's got students in high school talking about it. So just randomly, of those who are in vocational ministry, let's just say pastors, how many of you sensed a call between 14 and 21? So again, it's about 50%. Which, again, that's some good news there. The challenge is we don't often talk to them very much about it. We go, that's great. Now go to college, get a degree, get a lot of debt, and then we'll talk later maybe. Some more good news. Again, another Barna poll. Since the pandemic, they asked the question, I am more open to God than I was before the pandemic. If you notice there, the Gen Z is the highest number. Almost 60% say they are more open. There are openings available we are not recognizing. This is a Ryan Burge poll. His sampling is quite good, and so this kind of statistic is really excellent to take a look at. Now, it's kind of hard to see, but you notice the downward trend. Good, this is a TV, so I can actually use my pointer, sort of. You see, it dips down here. So, as historical, the beginning of this is those born. That's the other one. Those born in 1940. You had more women today. If you're born in 1940, it's more likely women will be in church than men, and that has been often the case. Churches are filled often more with women. But notice what happens around 1980. All of a sudden, those born after 1980, it's men are more often in church than women. And notice what else is happening. It's beginning to tick up. And now it's somewhat flipped. And I don't know, what would you say, some of the RU folks I'm talking to are seeing this as well. What would you say, Chad?
Yes, we've seen more students coming RUF generally, but also an increase in guys.
Yeah. And again, just biblically, theologically, the importance of it. And so when I say sociologically, it's all part of how God works. If we have men expressing an interest, we have people who can lead, and often the women will follow in that context. The flip is also those who have never attended. And again, you see there's this shift of those from 1980, they're more likely to not attend, if that makes logical sense, you can follow me. But it's more likely that women are saying they have never attended a religious service than men. So there's an opening there that we really need to take note of. So out of this, and this came out of a conversation that started last October with Bill Golden. We were, M&A is revamping their assessment. And I'll touch on that. I can talk about that at another time. It's some of the tools we're looking at, even how we describe it and talk about it and the process that's involved is being revamped. Well, we invited Bill, and Bill works with the candidates in the assessment in MTW. And it's great to have an outside voice saying, well, we do this and we do that. And we have been, what Bill's love language? What's your love language?
Alignment.
Alignment, all right? And we're getting this alignment where we're going, we're doing so much the same thing. What does collaboration and what does alignment look like? Well, as we did this on assessment, it started my mind churning. You only will be able to assess the people that you have in your pipeline. And so what comes before assessment? And we want to get people ready for ministry. What comes before that? We want them to consider ministry. So we created this 15-20-year pipeline. We're really talking long here. If we don't, we're going to be in trouble. And the first part of this is the ministry pathways. And I'll explain what this is in more detail. But this leads into a readiness, and the Fellows Program is going to be part of that. And then as they come out of that, each of our committees here, agencies here, have our own assessing process. That's the pink part of it. M&A has our assessment, our ministry discovery. MTW has Rev and some other ones. RUF has their assessment. And you'll notice there's some overlap with each of those. I'll describe what that potentially can be. And then we each have our own training. M&A has the Multiply. Kingdom Foundations, their field pre-field training. Of course, RUF has great training. But notice here, this is this pathway that I'm wanting us to be thinking about. And we're at the early stages here. It's a bit more than dreaming. Things are in process, and I'll talk about that. But there's nothing baked. We're wanting to get the word out, and we're wanting to see who is interested and how we can engage this. So let's talk first. In doing this, pathways, the readiness, the assessment, the training, I'm beginning to want us to talk about some common vocabulary. So in M&A and with MTW, saying, well, can we talk about some common competencies that are just important for people preparing for ministry? So this is kind of a runway, and the order is important here. Now, M&A has worked with various tools, and we've had until this year a list of 10 competencies for church planting. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the 10 competencies, and I'm in charge of it. So I'm a simple-minded person. I want it kind of reduced here. Let's talk about what are the competencies we are looking for. First and foremost is gospel competency. And part of that gospel competency is, do the people have spiritual vitality? Do they understand the gospel for themselves? Are they having gospel dialogue within themselves? Do they have a zeal for the lost? Do they care about people not knowing Christ? And with that, can they communicate it? Whether they, if as ordained preaching, but just in their conversations, at work, with friends, with family, with neighbors. That then, and with that, we want to have, and we're developing some diagnostic tools to help them think through that. And good thing with a diagnostic tool is if we see an issue, we're going, hey, you're really having an interest here, but what does it look like to develop that? We want to have some resources for growth. That then leads into the second competency, and the order is important. We have to start with the foundation of gospel competency, because if we see competency in the ones that will develop out of this, we sometimes ignore that they really don't have a good command of the gospel. And if they don't have that, they look good, but they could be a fruitless tree. And we want to see fruitfulness. Emotional competency. So this is, you know, EQ and CQ. Cultural intelligence, emotional intelligence. Do they have resiliency? And this is going to be true for all of our agencies. Can they stick it out? Can they go through hard times and progress? Again, some diagnostics, some tools. And these diagnostics is one of the things I really appreciated with our working with MTW, phrase that Bill used, that any of the diagnostics you're going to see us use, diagnostics are used for conversation, not declaration. We use them to be able to say, this is what we're seeing. Where can growth be? It's not, oh, you score here on this. You're not qualified. Get out of here. That then leads into a relational competency. Let's talk about your family dynamics. How do you relate to other people? Where's your integrity at? And again, what are the diagnostics? What are the places for growth? This then leads to the fourth and final one, leadership. Now, I'll just say in M&A, when we look for a church planter, if we see high leadership skills, they have good team dynamics, they're entrepreneurial, they can cast a vision, we can so easily get enthralled with them and say, you're an ideal church planter. Oh, you haven't shared the gospel in 3 years, and I'm not even sure you understand it. Oh, that's okay. No, we don't really say this, so don't quote me on that. Don't film me on that part. But what happens then is we get so enamored with that high leader, it can easily ignore or not be concerned about their relationships, their own cultural and emotional understanding, their understanding of the gospel. So this is a progressive movement here. And again, having some diagnostics and a response to that growth. What we'd like to see as part of this is having opportunity for some vocational coaching and develop some coaches that people can use if they like. They want to have these conversations as we build this out to help them determine where and how for Christian service. So we go back to this flow chart that we mentioned. So let's build out the green one on the pathways. This is our first step. What we're working on first right now, and we're in conversations with Covenant College and their faculty, helping us because they've done a lot of work in this area to develop this kind of program. This would be a one-day event, 3 hours, geared to 14 through 22-year-olds in various settings, in which we would just talk about what do we mean by vocation? What is the doctrinal basis? What's the history? How have we looked at it? What are your thoughts already at this point in your life about this sense of how is God calling and working in life? Again, this is geared to men and women. This is a very broad funnel that we can then gear into any of our groups and in a variety of places. It's not just for ordained ministry. This then would have some self-reflection, again, perhaps a diagnostic here to help them think it through. But what we want to be able to do is spell out the great variety of vocational options that are available to our young people. So it's not, again, M&A coming in and saying, hey, you want to be a church planter, don't you? It's cool. It's sexy. We're great. You know, it's all true, but that's not what we need to be doing. We need to be because so many of us, we have switched our vocations within the spectrum of being teaching elders, being a church planter in an established church. I'm getting to a point in life. I think I want to go with MTW now. I want to do RUF. I want to be a church. I want to do RUFI after I've been in pastoral ministry in a parish context. We move around. So we want to show the wholeness there of MTW, a ministry team, being a church plant team. And again, the people here we're wanting to talk to, it may never be ordained. And that's okay. I want them to be thinking about how they can volunteer part-time or full-time, be thinking how they can spend their life in these areas. That would then move to, after they go through this, they would have an opportunity of something called Next Steps, and I'll show you what that is. This is a series of 50-minute, either individual or it could be a small group study, in which they can look at some of the options you see here and just begin to think about it, pray about it. And with that, again, having some vocational coaching, someone to talk to, and at some point, it could be here, it could be earlier in the process, to have some sort of diagnostics in which they can talk about their talents, their passions, their experience, the context they're in, to help them think through as adolescents before they even choose the college, because this is an important component, because a lot of us are having a hard time as we're seeking to bring people in their 20s, and they come to us with $100,000 in college debt. And we can't do a whole lot with them. We can encourage them to get rid of the debt. Well, it's a mortgage plus that they're dealing with. So I want to help them think it through. Now, one side note that it's not on this slide, the biggest hurdle here is not going to be the 14 to 22-year-old. It's going to be the 40, 50-year-old named the parents. Talking to their kids about there is something beautiful in giving your life to serve the body of Christ. You may not have the big paycheck and the status, but we got to talk to them as well. That next steps I was talking about, we're beginning this process. Next steps right now is coming out of M&A's Multiply. If you haven't seen it, go online. We've got, 30 or so 10-minute videos of all the different M&A ministries, church planting, established churches. We're going to incorporate what MTW has done with their videos. Want to be in contact with RUF if they've got videos, or we can come in and shoot them and say, this is what it looks like. And with that, in conjunction with Covenant College, and in conversation with CDM, is create a curriculum. Now, this is such the rough draft type of thing, but in which they watch this 10-minute video, here's a scripture passage, what is this saying, and a series of questions. And for our sake right now, looking at that last question that's there, what in this ministry interests you? Can you see yourself involved in this? Why? To begin to get them thinking, I might be interested, this is an ESL, I might be interested in working with people who are coming to this country who don't know English. And I can, again, volunteer, but that could spur on other interests. That could spur on interest to global missions. That could spur on interest in RUFI, that's North American, working with international students. Who knows? Church planting. Other opportunities. This can be done in groups, this can be done individually, but it's being offered in the context of the church. This program is not something that M&A, RUF, MTW would walk in and do. We would package it, and again, work with CDM and deliver to churches that youth leaders, pastors, interested folks in the congregation say, hey, let's walk through this some Friday evening. As a church, it could be done in Christian schools. Chattanooga Christian School here is very interested in the material. We're looking, talking to Covenant College, beta testing it there as well. So again, in this process, that's just the green dot. That's the one component. The second one is, as we've heard a little bit about the Fellows Program, we're in early stages of conversations with the Fellows Initiative. So either making good use of that, but if those are coming out of college wanting more clarity, in which they can enter into a 1 or 2 year program, either in conjunction with existing fellows initiatives or parallel. So that is, they would be involved with men and women who are not thinking vocational ministry, but they're thinking vocation and how the Christian faith integrates with that. but some of them will move into this process. Talking about work and service and learning experience, the community, and how that fits in. And again, through this whole process, those competencies I was talking about, how can we integrate these competencies of gospel, emotional, relational, and leadership competency? So before they're, you know, they're as they're coming through college, coming out of college, they're getting this vocabulary as foundational. So whatever they do, they will have a much better foundation. Now, part of this fellows program, what we'd like to see, if we're talking about vocational ministry, is having kind of a rotation opportunity to be able to spend a couple weeks or a month overseas with MTW in a global context, be part of a church plant, and maybe an established ministry of M&A, disaster response, or refugees and immigrants. They could be an established church, cross-cultural context, be working with RUF or RUFI, RFG. Just experience that, so that by the time they're thinking, what do I do next, they already have a taste and can begin to have a better sense. So maybe that's seminary, and it could be a brick and mortar, it could be a hybrid, it could be distance. The opportunities do abound. They could go right to Rev and do the two-year stint, and through it all, REF internship, an M&A internship, and then can apply. I have a similar kind of construct, I'm not gonna show it now. One of the things we need to be thinking about is for you guys who do the Fellows Initiative, am I correct? They're all college graduates, right? Is that part of it? It's not necessary? Great. Good. And that's what I'm interested in. I'd love to see something like this geared to those in the trades. Because we are, 60% of men in the U.S. are not going to college. And it's like, okay, when it comes to ordained ministry, okay, it's not true. But well, we act like we can't use you, and we want to, and we got to help think through that whole process. And how do we get guys as they're in the trades through ordination? In Wisconsin right now, I think we have about 25 guys in seminary in Wisconsin. Over the last 8 years, we've gone from 0 to 60 guys preparing for ministry. And 15-20% are doing it without a bachelor's. But they're getting their MDiv because they made choices in adolescence and in their 20s not to do college, and that happens, and they're 30 and say, well, I want to be in ministry. I'm going to do 4 years married with kids for an undergrad and then 4 years seminary, and that would turn into 15 years. So we're getting people through the program, and that's what I'd like to see with this as well. Again, in this whole process, very briefly, I'm going to stop there. Are there any questions at this point? Yeah.
Yeah, I get 60 guys going. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin, how many of you would want to move to Wisconsin? And my point, you people are from there, Yeah, and Ari, you grew up there, and you're in Colorado, which is kind of Wisconsin West, if you will. We realized we couldn't bring people in. We had to raise them up. In 1995, we had 6 churches, and 5 of them came out in the 1990 to 95. From 1995 until 2010, every church plant failed. We couldn't recruit. We couldn't get anybody. We finally got someone to come up to plant a church in Green Bay, and it made us realize we have to stop recruiting and start developing. Pastors. Don't rely on the denomination to send us workers. Pray to the Lord of Harvest to raise up laborers. We have them in our churches, and let's talk to them. So we went from 6 churches to 21 churches in 10 years. And it was part of that was by saying to men in our presbytery, do you want to be in ministry? Yes, but I don't want to sell my house, move my family, and move to Jackson, Orlando, Charlotte. And we didn't want them to move to those places. Because in March, in Charlotte, March in Wisconsin, there's a difference. Wisconsin's great this week. The snow just melted. So anyway, so we started a program. We also pay for their education. 84% of their seminary degrees covered. There's a variety of ways we do that. They pay $2,000 a year for 5 years, and they have an MDiv from RTS or Covenant LAMP. So yeah, that's part of this kind of pathway. But that's further down the road. We got to turn it back earlier, so they're thinking about it then. But yeah, no, thanks. Any other questions? So this is, yeah.
I've been a youth pastor for 25 years, and I've seen all these great young men through youth ministry. They're so skilled, you know, ready to be pastors. Like, you know, they have all the gifting.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of conversations do you have to just kick people's butt to get them moving in that direction?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. We're at a cultural change, and this is not just ministry. This is true in business and military. It's harder to get Gen Z in leadership. There is an anxiety and fear of leadership. They want to be part of a team. They don't want to be in the team lead. Somewhat is the change of vocabulary, and it somewhat is here. Is I don't talk about, do you want to be a church planter? I said, do you want to lead a church planting team? Do you want a team with you to plant a church? Yeah, I want to be part of a team. So, yeah. So with M&A assessment, this is the change that's happening. And you'll see some of the same, the gospel competency and emotional competency. We're changing the name. We're not calling it M&A assessment. We're calling it ministry discovery. And people go, oh, how soft. And cozy. I go, yeah, I'm sorry, it is. Partly because we found that when we had people come to our assessment, 95% of them, we gave them some sort of thumbs up. Go plant in 2 years, in 5 years, 95% of the time. Well, we already did the assessment. And why are we putting especially the wife through this process and tell her, we're assessing you to see if your husband gets a job? That's anxiety nobody really needs. So it is, where do you fit in ministry? And we want to help people. This would be not just, do you want to be a church planter? And I feel like I'm going to start singing something from Frozen. Do you want to be a church planter? And say, where in church planting do you want to be? You have great evangelism skills. You're not a visionary. You're not an entrepreneur. We need you in part of a church planting team. You're just not going to be the lead. And they're okay with that. Again, you see, and you'll see here as you look at it, some of the diagnostics, these are still in conversation, but you'll see, and some of them will be secular tools. And again, remember, it's for a conversation, not declaration. We need to look, and this is where we really benefited from MTW, like using the MMPI. For issues of mental health. We got to be aware of this, and we need to help mentor them through it. And with each of them, I don't spell it out, but what are the responses? What can we offer them to help them progress? Bill, real quickly here, talking about MTW.
Yeah, so I'm very excited with where things are going and where things have been with MTW and M&A and RUF. And really, back 25 years ago, I remember talking with somebody about, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could work together as a partnership and if we had alignment? And I really am excited about seeing how this is all coming together. It was great being a part of M&A's assessment, and Chris will be a part of MTW's assessment this fall. And also, we're using one of M&A's counselors. So we're really trying to build upon one another and just with the goal of seeing the kingdom of God extended. So I just want to briefly share about MTW's process. So if somebody is interested in becoming a missionary with MTW, they would fill out an online form. We would then put them in contact with someone from MTW who would help explore their calling with them, connect them with fields, talk about potential barriers and obstacles. And then coming out of that, they would go through the application process with MTW, which includes an application, life history form, Bible testing, theological examination, psychological testing, and we would have some interviews even before they would attend our big conference, which is called Readiness Evaluation, or REV. It's a three-day immersive conference helping people discern their calling to missions and seeing if they're ready to serve on the mission field. Coming out of that, people would get a field invitation, oftentimes would visit one of our mission fields and see if there's a cultural fit within the team and make sure that they and the team feel like they could be successful. And then they would be approved as a missionary, and then we would begin our preparation process. And in terms of that process, we have an event called Kingdom Foundations, which is a week-long conference focusing on gospel competencies, support-raising training, philosophy of ministry, different things that would help people get prepared for the field. And then coming out of that, we have people go through 20 mentor cohorts. So these cohorts happen over a period of 10 months where they meet with people who are raising support, getting ready to go to the field. And in conjunction with that, we have a coach coming alongside of them as they're raising support and as a resource and liaison. And then this culminates with a pre-field training event where people gather together and are equipped and trained and prepared as they are about to deploy for the field. And then once they get on the field, we have a commitment to mentoring there, and then people would attend language school, different things that would help them adapt to the team in the field.
Don't embarrass yourself. And again, Keith Berger with RUF sent this, you know, that there are recruiting conversations, there are these pathways. And again, notice here the variety that is present. And again, an assessment process that, of course, leads to a placement, hiring, and training that goes along with that as well. So this is the path. I'm not going to go through the blue. I have information right now on M&A's Multiply Church Plan Preparation. What's the next step? That we've revamped that and how we do it with multiple tracks that's interactive and is delivering the information as they need it. But I think better is, didn't mean to quite do that, to go to if there are any questions at this point. We're going to wrap up. This is the preparation. I'm just going through it till I get to my last slide, the QR code again. Yeah.
What are some ways you could imagine this being integrated into the life of the local church? As we think about raising young people and directing them on vocational ministry.
That pathways, that first set of circles, is something we want to develop as a curriculum that is plug and play. That, you know, in your church, we want to do this, you put it on, we're not coming in to do it, and you can give it the flavor as you choose, but it gets them in this kind of a system in this program. The Fellows program would be a little bit larger. Existing programs, encouraging churches to start new ones would be part of that. This will only work if it's local church-based. This cannot be and must not be a denominational program in which we say, PCA has a wonderful plan for your life. It doesn't work. It's not who we are. It's not what we want to do. But we want to provide our congregations with the materials they need to be able to do this. And so again, you have the sign-up sheet. We'll put it in the back. If you are interested in this, we are just beginning it. I'm wanting to beta test it sometime this year. In 25, it might be early 26. We have a couple places to do some beta testing. We'd like to beta test it at some Christian schools, want to beta test it at some Christian colleges, and at some camps, and would love to talk perhaps at some of the colleges through RUF. A lot of this stuff's already happening, but we're trying to systematize it, and part of this would go into an aspect that we're looking at, somewhat unrelated. So it's related, but it's different, is creating a healthier integrated database of people that are interested in ministry, in which all of us can have access and encourage our young people to consider what vocational ministry could look like. Any other questions?
Yeah.
I'll just make the comment of I commend you on your vision for you to change the culture in Wisconsin. You realize, we outsiders don't come to live in Wisconsin. Wisconsin people, cheeseheads live here. We need to make cheesehead pastors, and you figure out what do we need to do to change our culture, our infrastructure, to do that. And then to answer this brother's question, the M&A committee for the Carolinas met at my church, and they were talking about, are we even looking around for people that we say to them as it's a valid thing for you? You can honor God by being a doctor, yes, or an architect, and you can honor God by serving His church.
Yeah.
Both here and around the world, it's a good thing for you to do. And
right.
A lot of high school kids are like, okay, I guess I'll think about that.
Yeah.
And then you begin to prepare that. Are you taking a second language in high school? Are you just taking the easiest one you can? And then in college, it's a big deal to be a pastor. It's a big deal to be a missionary. It's a big deal to give your life to Jesus. And the preparation needs to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so exactly. For us to call people to greatness, but to have our eyes open as the keeping generation to be looking for new people to come along. And what do we need to do to change in our culture so that they can run in their own lanes?
Exactly. Yeah. The realization that you all have young men and women in your church who could serve the kingdom in so many ways, and we don't think about it. As one guy said to us as pastors, he said, do you realize you're preaching to a 10-year-old who one day may be your pastor? All right? And, I mean, I baptized Ari. I don't know if you'll be preaching. I'll have to come out to Colorado and seeing that. And who? Oh, yeah, my son Michael, who's there. And my daughter is married to a pastor. And so that's been part of the way we do it. And that's a side thing is, as teaching elders, we need to be encouraging, not dictating, but encouraging our children to consider vocational ministry. And I was sharing with someone, a pastor, their son said, I'm thinking of being a pastor. And he said, I almost said, no, run away, don't do it. And he didn't. And I was sharing that with an elder in, I forget where it was, in Tidewater Presbytery. And he laughed. He said, my 15-year-old said to me, I want to be a lawyer like you, Dad. And he said, don't do it. It's not a great job. And it's strange. It's a culture shift. It used to be not always healthy. It used to be expected. You followed. But we should normalize those conversations with our young people and with our own children, that this is a good thing. Yeah.
So, when throughout Christian service from all kinds of backgrounds, including the trades, but the fact is, I think, a lot of ministry does require for competency, some college education, as well as theological seminary education. So what do you say to parents who want nothing to do with college liberal arts education, want their kids, if they go to college, to study engineering or something? But for ministry, you might need some history, you might need some literature, you might need some art or music or cultural studies that give you that kind of competency.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parents have no desire for their children to go into those kinds of
things. When it comes, the loss of humanities in our educational system is a huge loss. We need engineers. I want safe bridges, but I also want people who think in the humanities, who think in the arts, who've read well and understand history. So it is helping our parents to think in that broad sense. It's not about just making sure your kids get a good 401k and make good money. There's so much more, because they should understand they're not always happy. And having those conversations. The other thing is, we are wanting to rethink. Not, there's no change to BCO 21-4, but BCO 21-4 gives some options. There is college, university, an approved college, university, and an approved seminary. That's been the norm, and that's great. I want to continue that, but we do need to realize they can. The uniform curriculum states what they should be examined in. They need the languages, and they need the theological education. Can they get that through LAMP and get basically a Bachelor's of Divinity and still pass? Yes, they can. And a lot of our presbyteries now are getting guys through LAMP Seminary. Third Mill Seminary is just starting up. Birmingham Theological Seminary. So there are some ways in which we can bring those in who did not have the opportunity for university. Now, we got to do a rigorous exam. It doesn't mean we're not lowering the standards. We're just saying, you know, there's some other options there for them as well. And in the context in Wisconsin, if you're in Waupaca, Wisconsin, planting a church, they want somebody who understands Waupaca more than Chaucer. Now, I think Chaucer is really important to understand. It's really hard to understand if you're reading it in Middle English, but you know, that's part of it. All right, I think we've reached our time. I'll hang around if you have any other questions. There is a sign-up sheet if you want. If you just want to be, you know, more informed as this begins to roll out, and if you want to contact me, you know, you have my name. I didn't, by email, you're able to find that on the M&A site. So thank you very much.